from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last year in Massachusetts, where the state rolled out a new regulation regarding food waste. The law says that if you throw out more than a ton of food waste per month, it cannot go to a landfill. After some initial protests, the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection reports that 75% of restaurants, for example, had already adopted ways to deal with this change within the first 2 months. And Massachusetts is not the first. NPR reports that Vermont, Connecticut, and New York City have been working on similar changes to their regulations regarding food waste. San Francisco has been a kind of leader in this regard for more than a decade. Consider that the average American throws out 20 pounds of food a month, and every year, Americans waste 34 million tons of food. It's troubling enough when you consider how many human beings don't get enough to eat, but most of that food is not composted or recycled. So this hour, we're talking about composting and trying to answer your questions. How can you compost at home or do it more effectively? What can you compost, and what should you stop putting in the compost pile? How should you use it? And how might changes in the law impact the way we waste food or don't? My guest for the hour, we're coming at this from a number of different angles. Steve Kraft is here from Community Composting. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also here is Ryan Heberle from Vermagreen LLC. Ryan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Farms. Good to see you, Todd.
Good to be back, Evan.
All right, I'm going to start with, I want you to tell our listeners what it is that you, all of you do, because you're all slightly different angles here. Steve Kraft, Community Composting is based where and what is it?
We are a company based here in Rochester, New York, and we focus on two different things. The first is a residential food scraps collection service. So for homeowners who want to be able to compost all of their food scraps and actually get the compost back or potted plants back for their garden, they can sign up for our service online at communitycomposting.org. And so it's a full service food scraps recycling.
And what's the cost?
The cost changes depending on how frequently we pick up. We have an every other week plan, which is $16 a month. And for $30 a month, we'll actually come to your door every week. We pick up the food scraps, we dump them out, we clean the container for you, and then every year we give a distribution of either the compost, a potted plant, or we give their share of compost to a community garden.
Okay, so and for that fee, you're bringing a container to the homes?
Absolutely. Okay. We provide the container as well. It's 4 gallons. It has a sealed lid and our brand hot stamped on it, and it keeps the scent in so it doesn't really smell too much in people's homes, and it's watertight as well.
I'm familiar with that smell. As someone who composts at home and sometimes on rainy days when you don't take it out, I'm very familiar with that. All right, we're going to talk much more about what community composting does then as we go throughout the hour. Ryan Heberle, Vermagreen LLC. Vermagreen is what?
We are the kind of the middleman. We take all the food scraps and raw materials, bring it back to our site in Farmington, and we compost it all. We make a couple of different varieties of compost. Our main compost we sell is the organic compost. It ranges from your pickup truck full to tractor trailer full. You can have us deliver it or pick it up at our site. We handle anything from food waste to leaves to horse manure. And we use various other products to make our compost what it is today.
And what are the kinds of clients that you have?
We have anybody from a homeowner to a gardener to nurseries and greenhouses to wholesale distributors such as Bristol's and others.
And you're doing the composting on your site, and where is it?
That is correct, in Farmington.
In Farmington. Community Composting does the composting of food scraps where?
Actually, we work sometimes with Vermagreen, okay. And we also have worked with a lot of other places locally, from Brocolo Landscaping to most recently the Equicenter in Mendon. So we're finding people who are able to use all of this nitrogenous material that's really rich and mix it with things like leaves or wood debris, and the combination of those materials in the right balance produces this finished compost product.
Okay. And Todd Lighthouse, Lighthouse Farms is based where?
In Honeyway Falls and in Lima. We have a couple different growing locations.
And your relationship in the world of composting is what?
Well, I use it. I use Ryan's stuff. We also sell plants to Community Composting for their customers. So While Steve is the contributor of feedstock, Ryan is the maker of compost, we're the end user of compost. We're primarily a certified organic greenhouse operation, but we do organic farming as well. And then about half of our business is production of organic potting soils, which is compost-based. And that's where Ryan's product comes into play.
Before the hour began, the panel was, we were talking, and somebody said, well, essentially, just about anything that's been alive can be composted. And you're nodding right away, Steve. I want to talk a lot about sort of the food that we waste and that we have to, I think in many ways, I have to do a better job. I hope we all can do a better job of not wasting as much food. But is it true that just about anything that's been alive can be composted?
Absolutely. So one of the best teachers that we all have is the natural environment that surrounds us. So if we look at any natural system that has been living for a long time, any complex ecosystem, there isn't such a thing as waste. Everything that lives eventually dies, and all of the materials that make up those things become ingredients in food and nutrition to help new life grow in the future. So one thing that actually we were talking about last week over at Vermigreen was how we want to redefine in people's minds the idea of what waste is, because waste is really a resource that we haven't found a good use for. So in America, we really just don't think of all of these food scraps as having value, particularly because of the frame. When we use that frame, waste, we automatically think that this is something that we have to make go away, when in reality, 40 to 60% of what we're putting into the landfill as a consumer society really actually has tremendous value just from the organics segment.
On that note, though, Steve and Ryan can probably answer this question. One of the common questions I heard from, I think, two or three people asked this question in some form on Twitter in the last several days, which is, if it breaks down anyway, why does it matter if it goes in a landfill, if it's becoming organics material? Ryan Heberle?
That's very interesting. A lot of the stuff bound for landfill can be reused. Once it hits the landfill, it stays there. And yes, it does break down over time. But a lot of the things that we throw away can be composted and reused in our gardens, our lawns, or what have you. So I think it's, one of the slogans in my business is waste is a lack of imagination. So if you look at it that way, yes, it will break down, but I say we pull it from our landfills and compost it so we can reuse it.
Okay. And for example, I think about composting what I do at home. And what my wife and I do is probably similar to what a lot of our listeners, if you compost, maybe you do the same thing. Whenever there are food scraps, we've got a bin in the back. We fill it up over time. It breaks down. I don't know. I always think it takes a year or two before it really gets sort of fine and grained and soily. But in the spring when we're planting, we're always sort of confused about exactly how to use it. You know, is it a soil replacement? Is it used as just a fertilizer? I always do sort of a grass seed replanting, patching holes and whatnot. And am I supposed to use the compost there, or is it much better suited for gardening where we grow tomatoes, that kind of a thing? So Todd Lighthouse, first of all, what do you use? What kind of material do you use, and where do you use it?
The compost that we buy, well, I do compost myself, although like you, I classify myself as a lazy composter. I just make a pile and let it break down over a year or two, and it's good stuff. You can end up with fantastic compost that way. But because we make a very high-end product that we want to guarantee the performance of, we buy high-quality compost from Vermigreen, and we make our compost-based potting soils with that. That's the primary use for it. Our compost-based potting soil contains maybe about 40% compost. The rest is peat moss, rock powders, vermiculite, perlite.
So it's about 40% compost.
Roughly, yeah. Okay. But you can have varying degrees. That's just kind of the ratio that we've settled
on. You wouldn't use 100% compost.
No, I think, you can. I do know farmers that grow in, let's say, containered tomatoes in a greenhouse in 100% compost. You just don't need that much. It can be pretty rich. It can withhold too much water, maybe. So you have the other things that compost can kind of aggregate with to improve drainage and airflow within the mix, and that's why we add the other things to our mix.
Okay, well then let's get the other opinions at the table. And Again, I think part of the fun of this hour is we're just going to try to answer a lot of the questions. If you want to call the program, I see the phone's already ringing. I haven't even mentioned the number, but please do. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Ryan Heberle, if you're using compost in your yard, what's the ratio that you would use of compost material versus regular topsoil?
Sure. Kind of agree with Todd over here. I believe compost should be a soil amendment. We've had customers who plant it in straight compost, and the results are huge tomatoes with no fruit. It's just there's a lot of it's very nutrient rich. So
yes.
I tell all my customers, you have to mix it with something, a 50-50 mix. But for your backyard compost, you can use it for top dressing your lawn. Use it mixed in your garden. But yeah, I would definitely classify compost, good compost, as a soil amendment.
As a soil amendment, or I think of it as a fertilizer,
yes.
That kind of a thing. Okay. And you mentioned top dressing a lawn or the garden. It doesn't do better for one or the other. It's useful in functioning.
Correct.
Steve, how do you answer that question? Do you use it as sort of an amendment as well, or a fertilizer?
Absolutely. Particularly the stuff that Ryan has is really rich. So the people who give us the best feedback are usually mixing it to make some sort of a topsoil. And then that is what they're using as the base in which they can plant their raised beds in the city. That's a common use.
Okay, I heard Ryan mention 50-50. Todd say around 40%, but anywhere in that range? What do you think, Steve?
Really, I got to hand this off to these boys because I have some experience, but they obviously have much more than I do.
Okay,
so.
but doesn't really even need to be more than half.
But you can top dress anything, your vegetable beds, your ornamental beds, your lawn, you know, anywhere up to an inch of thickness on top of any planting is perfect.
Is this how people get those 900-pound pumpkins? Do they just do a pure compost soil? Is that what happens?
I think there's some more secrets besides just compost.
I suspect you're right. I'm going to get to some of your phone calls in a minute. If you're just joining us, we're talking composting with Ryan Heberle of Vermagreen LLC, Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Farms, and Steve Kraft from Community Composting. And we're talking about all the various questions we commonly have about how to compost, the benefits of composting, and we'll also talk about what they think. In fact, let me ask the panel now what you think about what you see in terms of the legal side of things. Every town and every state maybe approaches this a little differently. I had a listener on Twitter ask about, she said, the city of Batavia. And if you're in Batavia and you're listening, please correct me if I'm wrong. I've tried to ascertain if this is true or not. She thinks you're not allowed to compost if it's within sight of the road, for example. Whereas other municipalities, and we've talked about it, San Francisco, New York City, et cetera, they are encouraging it. Howard County, Maryland now has a pilot program with, I think, 1,000 homeowners where they're experimenting with collecting food scraps in a similar manner that we're hearing community composting does. So we're seeing governments decide, hey, we're wasting too much. Let's do something about this. Steve Kraft, what do you think?
I'm so glad that you brought this up. This is one of the most exciting things to me in current events right now. So one thing that you had mentioned earlier, Evan, was that Massachusetts has made this landfill organics ban for commercial businesses who produce more than 1,000 pounds of material per week. Vermont has a beautiful system. You guys can check it all out online. It's called the Vermont Materials Management System. Again, they changed the frame. They're not calling it waste management. They call it materials management. By 2020, all producers, that includes households, have to divert all of their organics away from the landfill. We see this in Connecticut, Rhode Island. This is a trend that's not going away, and I think that legislators are catching on to the fact that this is going to save them money, and it's really an environmentally conscious way to steward this material. So there are examples of things that other cities have done that we could do here in Rochester, and I highly encourage that any of the lawmakers here who are listening consider this strongly. There are programs like Pay As You Throw for waste collection. So in Rochester, we have to pay part of our taxes, which provide for one or two 96-gallon containers that are picked up curbside weekly. So that doesn't give anybody any incentive to throw away less. Whereas in Portland, Maine, you pay per bag that you get from the city. And so you really realize, wow, I've got to pay $15 a bag. I'm going to try to reduce the number of bags that I throw away. So I'm going to think a little bit more about what I buy, how I consume, and maybe I'm going to divert some of these organic materials or recyclables out of that waste stream so that I save money. So when people can connect the fact that something has an economic tax, their behavior will change. And we can see that that will translate into really beautiful environmental and social consciousness changes for the long run. So I think that our legislation plays an intimate role in helping us make better decisions in regards to this.
Along those lines, just reading off of San Francisco's website on how their process works, they've got three bins. So property owners have three bins. Green for composting, blue for recycling, black for trash, and residential property owners can lower their refuse bill by recycling and composting more and ordering a smaller black trash bin or decreasing the frequency of the collection. So if you compost more, you can pay less for the service. That's exactly what you're talking
about. Exactly.
And is there any movement that you're aware of locally to see this kind of thing happen here?
Well, some of us who really care go to the Monroe County Recycling Advisory Committee meetings and try to push that. But I'm really just learning about more of this now. So if there's more, I would love to learn how else I could help. I don't really know. But it seems like the city is going through a pilot program now where they're enlarging the recycling bins. They have 1,096-gallon recycling toters that they put out there to try to see if people can recycle more, because right now they have very small containers. Will they? But I don't think that they have mentioned anything about a pay-as-you-throw model, although the county, Monroe County, has put in their solid waste materials management plan that they want to reduce the amount going into the landfill by 60% by 2025 or something like that. So they definitely know they want to reduce it, but I don't think that they've put anything like this into a plan yet.
Hmm. Ryan Heberle, what do you think about when you look around the country and you see other municipalities or governments talking about composting from a legal side? What do you think?
Well, what we compost on our site, we haul in volume. I'm not so much involved like Steve is in the day-to-day operations and the household material. We focus mainly on large corporations that are food processing plants. Mm-hmm. They're throwing away tons and tons of food waste. Yeah. And we can control what we come in and watch the quality of our products come in, therefore making good compost on the other end.
You don't have to wait for governments to step in. You're doing that job now.
Yeah, that is correct. So for me to get involved with governments, the only governmental thing that we handle is with DEC, which they've been excellent to work with. And so far, so good.
Todd, are you encouraged by what you've seen around the country?
Very much, and especially by what Community Compost is doing, too, locally. Economics is incentive-based, and you know, I think community composting is filling a wonderful niche, but we need a lot more of that because we're wasting so much valuable resource here.
Every single phone line is now lit up, so let's take some calls on your questions on composting with our panel. If you're just joining us, Ryan Heberle from Vermagreen LLC, Steve Kraft from Community Composting, and Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Farms are all here. And this is Sue in Fairport. You're first up. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. A couple of things. First of all, I compost at home, and my compost pile is very, very wet. It was before the rains. I'm wondering what I can do. And second, I'm very skeptical about using horse manure, given the drugs that horses I know are given. If you could comment, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Sue.
Sure.
Go ahead, Todd, first.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So long as our community or culture uses volatile organic compounds, they will find their way into a finished compost, no matter how high quality a compost it is. Fumes from automobiles, all that stuff, it does find its way into a compost. So yes, those drugs can still be present in a well-finished compost, but as far as I'm concerned, that's the best way to deal with those compounds, because these microorganisms are highly efficient at breaking down these molecules to their most basic ingredients.
And the higher the temperature, the more it breaks down. Is that right, Ryan?
Yeah, you want to reach a certain temperature. 134 degrees kills all your weed seeds and harmful bacteria. Our compost rows we have at our site reached 155 to 160 during the breakdown process. So temperature plays an important factor in making sure your compost is finished and done properly. Now to our other question, being so wet, compost is very, very, the water retention is super high. So to dry it out, she's going to have to add more dry material to it. But once a compost is wet, as Todd knows, he's bought our compost before, once it gets wet, it stays wet. So it's very hard to dry it out unless you simply lay it out and let it dry in the sun. So to her question on being so wet, I would add drier material to it and continue the composting process.
And she can cover it prior to a
yes.
rain, too.
When it comes to the breakdown of materials, one of the questions, the next frontier in composting may be human waste. And there are plenty of research projects going on right now, because the most common question that I've read, and NPR has reported on this with some routine, the questions are pharmaceuticals and heavy metals that end up in human waste. And then you wonder, can they break down? Are they going to be in any composted material? A lot of the research so far has a pretty favorable outcome on this from what I've seen. And I know that they're looking more into it. But Steve Kraft, what do you think?
I'm going to echo Todd here. You know, if we're putting it into our bodies or into our food, it's going to continue to pass on in some way. So we have a couple of options. We can sit on the porcelain goddess and defecate into fresh water and then pay a large energy tax and environmental tax to then have all of that water mixed with fecal matter, industrial and medical waste, and then have to separate all of it out again and use all sorts of energy to do this. Or we could defecate into carbonaceous materials, dry bedding, using some locally sourced materials. Where we are, that could be sawdust or wood shavings or wood chips, leaves. And if that material is then properly composted and we keep it separate from, you know, where we're growing things until we're sure that if we made sure that the temperature profile was reached properly and we did any testing we want, we could use that material then to help us grow ornamental plants or trees. And I've even worked with farmers in New England who use it right on their vegetable gardens. They're very talented and they pay attention to the processes. But I think that, again, by calling it human waste, we view this as being this scary thing, but really it could be a resource if we properly manage it.
And NPR reports that there are certain cultures that have a long history of using it. The Chinese, for example, and among many others. If you want to call the program, you can do it. We're going to keep moving down the phone lines with our panel. Molly in Rochester. Go ahead, Molly.
Hi. I'm calling to – I've listened, and all of the conversation seems to be directed toward people who have lawns and backyards. But I would like to have some guidance for people who live in apartments or condos where there is no land on which to use the compost, but people who would, like myself, who would very much like to compost.
It's a great question. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, Molly, thanks so much for calling in. We have a service called Community Composting. It's right here in Rochester, and you can sign up for our service online at communitycomposting.org. That's communitycomposting.org. So we really try to cater to people exactly like you, and we have a very large customer base of apartment dwellers, people who live in townhouses and condos, and we provide a bin for you. And into this bin, you can put all of your food scraps from before you've prepared for a meal or anything that's gone bad in your refrigerator, even dead houseplants. You can toss them in there, and you leave it outside. We can help you find an agreeable area with your property manager. Usually that's in like the refuse area behind your building, and we service that bin either every other week or every week. And if you don't have a garden, we will donate your share of compost to a local community garden. This year we worked with a few different people right here in Rochester. One was at the Gandhi Institute, and another was Rochester Grow Green. So we can help you, and again, you can sign up online if you wish. And another alternative for people who live in the city but might live near a community garden is that there are a lot of community gardens who actually do have composting programs. That's free. You can get your hands dirty. You can really learn about the process. And then you can also grow some food near where you live and meet some of your neighbors. So that's a really beautiful thing. One other quick thing I'll note is that the city does have a program where you can take any of the vacant and abandoned lots and apply for a garden permit. And they don't give you the land, but they give you access to plant as much as you want within reason. And that's a place where you could compost, and you could also grow plants in an urban area too, and it's free.
All right, panel, just going down the list. Here are questions that have come from listeners on what can you compost, what can't you compost. Coffee grounds.
Yes.
Yes.
Everyone said absolutely yes to coffee grounds. Coffee filters.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Todd, you hesitated for a second.
Well, maybe it depends on what the filter is made out of. I don't know.
But generally, we're saying yes to coffee filters.
Yeah. If it's a non-plastic or not wax-coated material, I think it should be fine.
Eggshells.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes to eggshells. A lot of people asking about meat and fat, unused fat from meat products.
It really depends. It depends on what it's mixed with. As Steve mentioned earlier in the hour, anything that was living can be composted. Fats and meats do take a long time to break down, but they can be broken down.
But if you have, Molly, listen, I want to say to Molly's phone call, she's absolutely right. I'm sort of myopically thinking about my backyard composter, but when I say backyard composter, if you don't have a backyard, don't be offended. I think home compost bin, whatever you have, if you put meat in it and you don't have Vermagreen LLC doing it at a certain temperature, Ryan, is it not going to break down if I do it in my backyard?
Well, for instance, if you put apple cores and banana peels in the composter along with meat, your apple cores, everything's going to break down quicker than the meat, and you're going to have a conflict of interest almost in your composting process. One material is going to be thoroughly done, and the other one's going to be half through. For that reason, I would not mix the two together personally. Now, in a setting where we have it in our site, where your temperature is going to run 160 for a matter of 6 weeks, then we can do that. But
okay.
In the backyard composting, I would recommend not to.
Okay. So backyard composting should be a little bit more uniform, but coffee grounds okay. Obviously, fruits, fruit cores, vegetable products that you don't eat, eggshells okay. We've had some questions about pastas and grain products, bread.
Yeah, all that stuff can be composted. The key thing is, though, a lot of the fruit vegetable scraps are nitrogenous. They ought to be mixed with a carbonaceous material like leaves or straw.
The brown that we hear, right?
The brown. Yes. The brown is
Does
the
coffee count as, grounds count as brown or no?
I think that's a green.
That's a green.
Originally, it was a bean.
Okay, so it's not it's not a brown. So brown needs to be white. Dead leaves?
Yes.
Yep.
Sawdust, wood chips.
Okay. All right. So the brown's
paper.
Good. Do you want a 50-50 mix of brown and other?
The ratio is between 1 in 25 to 1 in 40, the 1 being the nitrogenous material and the 25 to 40 being the carbonaceous material.
So you don't need nearly a 50-50 mix?
No.
Just
no,
a small amount of
greens.
A small amount of browns or greens?
Greens.
You want mostly browns?
Yes. Because that is the fuel. The brown is the fuel. The green is the fire. So you need lots of fuel to keep that fire
okay.
going.
Okay. So I think I've been doing this incorrectly. I think we've had very little leaves and mostly, you know, banana peels and apple cores and things like that. You're saying reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Big
yeah.
pile of leaves, when you rake them up, do you need to break the leaves down first? Should we grind them up before we put them in the compost?
You can if you want a finished compost faster. It'll help. If you shred anything or break down any feedstock going into your compost bin, it'll break down faster.
All right.
You don't have to.
Fact or fiction, you put dead weeds that you've pulled, you put them in your compost, and when it breaks down and you use it, it will create weeds wherever you put them in the future. Yes or no?
It can, yeah.
Yes,
it can.
If your compost doesn't reach a high enough temperature in the pile. So if you're at my home, I'm a lazy composter. I just make a pile. I let it sit for a year and use it in my garden. Some weed seeds will still be there, of course. But if you're an active composter and manage your pile thoroughly and turn it every so often, that the cooler outer portions of the pile are going to find their way to the center and reach a higher temperature and will kill off those weed seeds and plant pathogens.
Okay. And do you need to stick a pitchfork in and try to turn your compost pile with any regularity?
I would say yes. Here's the reason. All the microorganisms working in compost need oxygen. And the minute you deprive them of oxygen, they stop working. Every day in our compost site, we test CO2 levels, which in reverse is checking our oxygen levels. If our CO2 is over 20%, actually if it's over 12%, we turn our compost. Same within the backyard. You need water and you need oxygen.
Need water on it.
Yes.
Put water on your compost pile.
If you want it like a moist sponge,
yeah.
You don't want it dry like a dry sponge or ring and wet. You want it like a moist sponge, and you need oxygen.
Okay. Yep. Your phone calls are all coming up after this short break, and so if you're waiting on the line, we're coming right to you as we answer questions on how to compost with a great panel this hour. Ryan Heberle from Vermagreen LLC, Steve Kraft from Community Composting and communitycomposting.org, and Todd Lighthouse from Lighthouse Farms. More of your questions and phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, it's our monthly science roundtable, and we're talking about the rise in interest in robotics, not only from professional scientists, but we're talking about grade school students. There are more robotics competitions and classes starting in grade school, in middle school, and in high school now than ever before. What does it mean for our future? We're talking robotics in our monthly science roundtable next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Geneva on the Lake, a Finger Lakes region resort offering hospitality and fine dining for getaways, conferences, and weddings. GenevaOnTheLake.com.
Welcome back to Connections. All right, we're going to get through as many of your calls and questions for the rest of the hour, and we are packed. Tim wants to know, how do banana peels compost as far as fast or slow?
If they're mixed with, so that would be a nitrogenous material. If they're mixed with carbonaceous material, they'll break down pretty quickly.
They will. And pineapple skins and tops.
Maybe a little bit longer because they're more coarse.
Okay. Back to the phones. Liz in Canandaigua. Go ahead, Liz.
Hi.
Hi, Liz.
Go ahead, Liz.
Hi, I'm from Woody's Cafe, a cafe we just opened 3 months ago. And our main thing is organic, local, compostable, and we are actually composting right now in partnership with Sunrise Nursery and Gardens in Canandaigua.
Nice.
Very. Yep. And how's it going?
It's going really well. My husband and I have stuck with our guns, with our philosophy, and opened with using compostable sugarcane recycled products, cups, plates, everything. We don't use corn plastic. We don't really believe in that. But everything seems to be going well. It's been, you know, like a learning curve for the community, for some that aren't really used to eating on, quote, paper plates. But it's been wonderful because we just take our compost, we bring it to the nursery, and we dump it, and we, you know, do our thing. And then Brian Ryan will be turning it and, you know, dealing with it that way. And hopefully we'll be growing food from it at some point and bringing it back into the cafe.
That's great stuff. Tell us again, which cafe?
It's called Woody's Cafe. It's on Route 332 in Vision Commons. And we're very new. We just opened 3 months ago.
Well,
it's going great.
Congrats on the success so far, Liz. Thanks for the phone call. It's great to hear that we have businesses thinking in that way. Again, even before there is sort of regulatory impact that we've seen in other places. But there are also people like Paul in Brighton who have questions about how long and how whether you can do this year-round. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, practical question. So I haven't started composting yet, but I have a backyard. It's not very big, but I assume most people, when they compost, they put the compost some distance away from the house to reduce odors and things like that. But what do you do in the winter time when the backyard's covered with 2 or 3 feet of snow, and you have to trudge through the snow, you know, to get the compost? So how do you handle things like that?
Well, I think you just hike out there and enjoy the snow. What's really cool, though, is compost continues, the process continues to happen even throughout the winter, particularly if you do get that carbon ratio, carbon to nitrogen ratio up high. And you will miraculously see steam coming out of it, which is really cool. But if you have the chutzpah and you can walk out there in the winter, it'll still enjoy having that fresh material. One handy thing that's kind of a hiccup for a lot of people is that they don't have enough of this carbon. So if you make a carbon pile in the fall, which is perfect timing, before the winter comes, keep it covered, keep it easily accessible. You're going to find that you're going to feel much more motivated to go out there in the winter and say, oh man, all this material is nice and dry. I can just open up my compost turner or my pile with a pitchfork, just move over some of the snow, get right into the center, put in some of that fresh material, your carbonaceous material, whether it's wood chips or sawdust or leaves from the fall, are all dry and ready to go. Toss them in there and go back inside and let it all rip for another couple of weeks.
And the process doesn't hit a wall in the winter. The process does not hit a wall in cold weather.
It'll slow down. I mean, Ryan, Todd.
Correct. Yeah, it will slow
how
down.
How far should it?
Go ahead, Paul.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. How far should the composter be from the house typically?
It all depends on where you live and how many neighbors you have. We got some composters that compost in their garage. They use red worms for the wintertime. I mean, there's different options you can do. But it all depends on, you know, how you manage it. If you just throw material on top, you're going to have the neighbor's cats and raccoons and all kinds of pets back there. But it's totally your call.
But when it comes to the winter, again, the process can slow down but doesn't stop. We don't have to assume because we've got cold winters, don't compost in the winter.
Correct. That is correct.
Okay. On Twitter, Greta says, is there evidence composting changes behavior up the food chain so we don't have to grow that wasted food in the first place? I don't know. It's a good question. Maybe logically, Todd. I don't know if there's a study that indicates.
No, it makes sense. It would be nice if it did alter our behavior in that way.
I have to think that the more we are in tune with that kind of thing, the more it is. It almost has to at least get us more cognizant of behaviors. Yeah, Steve?
I have not read anything about it. I can speak from my own experience and from the people who I work with. In my own world, learning how to compost helped me wake up to the fact that there was all this material going in. Some of it helped me realize that I could then shop more carefully so that I wasn't buying more than I needed, because I'm really in touch with that material now that I'm having to make this compost. So it helps heighten awareness. Similarly, we started doing a compostables pickup at the Genesee Community Charter School. So all of the kids there are now composting. One of the things that they come back with that's resounding strongly with me every time is that they're trying to waste less. And as a result, their caterer is now producing less food for them. All of the lunches are getting scaled down because they realized how much material they were wasting. So when we present ourselves with this and we actually see it and we interact with it, it can change our behavior.
Greta, it's a great question, and I couldn't agree with Steve anymore. Let's get back to the phones, and this is David in Pittsford. Go ahead, David.
I just wanted to mention that I called my trash hauler and complained that the bill was too high. And they said, well, you can pay by the bag if you like. And that's exactly what I do. I recycle almost everything. And then about once every 6 weeks, I put a big bag out there, and they charge me $3.50 to take the bag away.
That's great.
That's awesome. May I ask which trash hauler you're using?
Yeah, sure. It's Cleanway Disposal. They're in Victor.
Great.
And so that's working out okay. You got a thumbs up from the panel here, David.
Yeah, well, they charge me a monthly fee for pickup, and it's far lower than it was before I went to the per-bag deal. And so I put out typically three big blue boxes full of material for recycling every week. And that's covered in my monthly fee. So,
nice.
And I had a quick question for you. I've seen milorganite sold. It's supposedly some kind of a waste product from Milwaukee. And I was wondering, is there any danger of heavy metals? Like if people throw batteries into the garbage, would there be heavy metals in the in that material?
Well, as far as I know, milorganite is derived from sewage treatment plants. So anything that you throw down the drain and isn't properly separated out at the plant can find its way in milorganite. So it really is human waste and everything that goes down the drain. There is heavy metals data available for any fertilizer sold. So that information, there should be a website on the bag that you can go find that information online with.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the question. And let's get to Cannadice. This is Patty in Cannadice. Go ahead, Patty.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have been composting for years, and we live in the country. And the bears and raccoons and everybody is really interested in that pile. So I had to get containers. I had a friend, I can't imagine that he would do this, but he wanted to know if I wanted his big barrel composter, you know, the $500 deal that is up so that when you dump it, you put your wheelbarrow under it and it comes out in the wheelbarrow. Anyway, so I had also gotten a smaller barrel from Agway, and what I do is put the kitchen waste and the grass clippings and all the new compost into the smaller barrel. When that gets too full, I empty it into the larger barrel and just keep turning them. You know, the big one has a crank, and the small one, you just turn this barrel. It's up on a rod through the middle of it. And I get fabulous compost out of it. For a while, it was too wet, but I've learned how to put more brown into it to get it to more of the consistency that I want it to be. During the winter, though, what I do is we have a deck, and under our deck I put a garbage pail. And we have our compost in the kitchen, and we keep it in those big coffee, big red coffee cans, you know, plastic coffee cans. And two of those I put into a paper bag that's in a plastic bag, and put those out into the garbage pail that's right outside the basement door. It freezes, and when it thaws in the spring, I put it into the new composter, and off we go again.
Very good.
We have terrible clay up here, and after 40 years of doing this, some of it is not terrible clay anymore.
That's a great success story, Patty. I'm glad to hear it's going well for you, and that's a lot of effort that you're putting into it. Real briefly, I think Patty's question reminds me to try to ask our panel what a number of our listeners have been asking online. How long does it take material to break down? I think we've been hearing various answers, but Ryan, what's an easy answer?
The easy answer is the smaller the material in, the faster it breaks down. So if you would put a whole watermelon in your composter, it's going to take you 3 months. If you dice that watermelon up into small chunks, it'd be quicker. And if you put it through a blender, it's going to be even faster. So the more smaller the material, the quicker it breaks down.
Okay. But it shouldn't be more than a year or two to get a bin in your backyard
No.
really well broken down.
No, not at all. We actually, our compost process takes us about 18 weeks.
About 18 weeks for you?
Yes.
Of course. Again, Vermigreen's got the temperature advantages a lot of us don't have. Here's a few comments from online. Amy writes to us, Evan, great program. Composting is such an important topic. I study decomposition in grad school. I'm now a farmer. I use both Ryan and Todd's products religiously and attribute my success growing specialty cut flowers to Vermigreen in the field and the living earth in the greenhouse. Thank you, Todd and Ryan, for doing what you do. And community composting is one of the programs that makes our city Rochester. Thanks again. That's Amy. Amy, thanks for the comment. Very nice to hear that. Kim writes to us and says, great topic today. I've heard that you shouldn't compost potatoes, tomatoes, and cucumber due to blight, and citrus and onions due to bitterness. Is that true?
I don't think so. I do understand there's two schools of thought with the blight issue, there's several blights that affect solanaceous crops like tomatoes especially, but late blight has been a primary concern of organic farmers because it can come in overnight and wipe out your crop really in a day or so. But from an organic perspective, I'd like to think taking those diseased organisms and composting them, because if the compost pile is properly managed, it's going to take a certain type of microorganism to consume or decompose those late blight organisms. And so those late blight decomposers we want more of in our gardens. And so we're really creating habitat for those good guys by properly composting those diseased materials.
Everyone agree on that point there?
Yep,
very good.
A
couple of listeners have been asking if there's an easy list on where you should, what you should and should not compost. Communitycomposting.org has a compostable list. Steve, does that relate to what you do? Is this what you would advise people at home?
That list is specific to the materials that you can put in the bins that we provide you. And ultimately, anything that ever grew or lived will break down. And as we had touched on earlier, if you do have a backyard type of composting operation going on, or maybe you haven't really fine-tuned your pile yet, I would avoid putting in any really fatty material.
Meats,
bones, shellfish, a lot of dairy. It might really kind of upset the flow. And again, if they're not broken down really properly and there's not a lot of surface area, they're just going to hang out and they won't compost at the same rate as everything else. So it might be best to avoid putting those into your home compost bin. However, if you sign up for our service and you're a resident or a business, you can toss those in as long as it's not more than 5% of the total material that you put in there.
And if you want to contact communitycomposting.org, $30 a week, $16 every other week, and
yes,
they'll bring you a bin. Where do people find you?
Communitycomposting.org. We're also at the Brighton Farmers Market. They can sign up there. They can also buy Ryan's compost bagged there, and we have some other merchandise available. Also, I just want to also peg that we opened up a commercial service very recently. So if you have a business, an office, a restaurant, a school, your hotel, a cafeteria, a cafe, we can provide organics collection containers that are 32-gallon rolling toters for you as well. So we're actually sold out of bins, and we're ordering more. But if you want to email us at info@communitycomposting.org, we'd love to sign you up and get you going.
And if they want to contact Vermagreen, Ryan, how do they do that?
www.vermagreen.com.
VermiGreen.com.
Correct.
Bonnie writes to us, and we'll get the panel's take on this. Bonnie says, the rationale behind providing smaller disposal containers and having to pay more for any need that exceeds that container presents big problems for the poor who cannot afford to pay more. In addition, poor people have to experience more daily frustrations. The wealthy should be the prime example for such approaches rather than putting more pressure on the poor, given what they have to face every day. She adds, would these policies that you've been talking about exclude residents from putting other items like old furniture, et cetera, to the curb for pickup? I don't think we're talking about excluding other items. Not that I know of, Steve.
I don't think so. However, it is an interesting thing. No matter what your socioeconomic status, I think if we can be more aware of the fact that all of the things that we buy have a life cycle, thinking about where they go afterwards is something that we can think about when we're buying something too, that I think is left out of the conversation with many families, my own included. We never talked about where is this couch going to go when we're done with it. And I think it's just something that we can think about. But the city could and does continue to provide the service where we come out with a grabber truck. If there's something really large on the curb, we'll pick it up, and the city, as part of your trash disposal bill, we'll throw that away.
Jen writes to us with a couple of questions here. She says, I've been composting for years in a small lot in the city. For winter, all you need is a plastic rotating bin that you move right to the back door, and then I can use it by taking one step into the driveway. I save leaves and brown paper bags to use in the winter. She says, we put a tiny bag of trash out, recycle almost everything. The city does need bigger bins. Our trash is mostly kitty litter. Anything we could do with that?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, not likely. In other words, for kitty litter,
we don't accept it in our compost site.
Okay, so it sounds like not yet, Jen. And then Jenny also says styrofoam is the biggest thing that's not recyclable. I bring large packing pieces to the county's eco site. So thanks, Jen, for that. And Eileen says, we are vegetarians. We compost scraps. We don't throw food. And we'll keep our compost kitchen collector in the freezer. No stink. So there's a thought there. Last quick comment. Susan in Shortsville. Susan, you got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that you can get composters made from recycled plastic from Gardner's Supply in Vermont. They snap together, they have a secure lid, and you can get a metal screen that keeps rodents out from the bottom. I keep mine right next to my trash barrel, and so the compost goes out to the barrel at the same time I'm taking what little trash I've got out. Mostly it's the recycle barrel that gets filled up.
Very good. Well, it sounds like you've got a good solution there. We've had so many great questions and ideas this hour. Scott in Canandaigua did call in and ask about sawdust. Again, sawdust is part of the brown that we talk about. So yes for sawdust. In fact, not only yes for sawdust, but what I learned is one of the things I've been doing wrong is I've been doing mostly food scraps with just a little bit of leaves. I need to change that ratio around and do mostly kind of broken down leaves and sawdust. And less of the, well, I mean, we'll put all of our food scraps in there, but we need to do more of the other stuff. Great panel this hour. Our thanks to Ryan Heberle from Vermagreen LLC. Great to have you here. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you.
Steve Kraft, Community Composting, communitycomposting.org. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much.
And Todd Lighthouse, Lighthouse Farms. Where can they find you, Todd?
Lighthouse-gardens.com.
I want to ask you about what you brought. You've got all these great products
here. Well, we've got some of Ryan's high-end compost here, and we've got some of our branded compost-based potting soil that we call the Living Earth.
It looks great. Looks very, very good stuff. Thanks for your expertise, and you saw the great community interest this hour. These are three great resources. Our listeners, contact them if you have questions or you just want to know more about what they do. They are helping lead the community in these regards. Short break. We're talking robotics in our monthly Science Roundtable next.